Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi, as well as Teresa Sammons and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi to the good people, folks.
Yo.
Hello.
And just a little FYI for everybody who is listening and maybe didn't check the number or the title. This is officially the 500th episode of the Let's Weekend podcast. I have been doing this shit for a little over 10 years now. And I mean, it's awesome. And then I also think, like, where has my life gone?
500 episodes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're at least a good chunk of that life is well documented now. So there's that.
Yeah, it is, I suppose. But yeah, so among the other things we'll be discussing this week is, you know, the shit you already kind of figured was going to be talked about. One of the big ones being the fact that Twitter is in really hot shit because they their recent Grok AI image manipulator feature ended up being used exactly the way you thought it was going to be used on Twitter. And now a bunch of countries have banned it. There's one or two countries that are considering legal action, one that absolutely is taking legal action, and one country that is getting legal changes to criminalize those who use or supply, quote, nudification tools. It's gotten so bad that Twitter itself is now actively blocking that ability for Grok. And yeah, and of course, as you can imagine, Elon just, you know, publicly just doesn't give a shit because he's Elon. He's an asshole. But we also have a bunch of other stuff, including the ongoing bullshit with Greenland. I say ongoing with Greenland. They really wanted no part of it, but we have a dipshit for a president, and he's decided that this is going to be his hyperfixation for the next couple of weeks. And a bunch of other, you know, Trump-related stuff. We also got some stuff from NASA. Lucasfilm recently had a big shakeup. And, of course, we got our regular entertainment-related stuff, including some news about profits and stuff like that. We got all that and more on this week's edition of Let's Weekend. But before we start doing any of that, before we decide to go on to the meat of the stuff, we're going to start off, as is tradition, talking about all the stuff we've been doing that's taken us up to this point this week. And it's also, as tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Yeah, I've been enjoying the weather. I think today was our first day above freezing in a handful of days.
Uh-huh.
And then we go back down under that line for a bit. But it was kind of a warm reading today.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much wind. We got a little bit of snow, nothing really sticking, so that was good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been watching some stuff, a lot of Batman, as I continue to watch more of that. Watch the Nolan Batman trilogy, mm-hmm. which all is really good. Mm. Then again, just a really fun, intro movie. It doesn't bother you with a lot of the classic details of the mom and dad dying and all that.
Mm-hmm.
More focuses on how Bruce gets the fuck out of Gotham and becomes who he's going to become,
mm-hmm.
and all that. And that's a pretty good way to start this whole thing. And then obviously the Dark Knight is really fucking good.
Yep.
You know, that's just a fun time. And then Rises is still good. It's just a little weird.
To be fair, a lot of the Dark Knight Rises issues have to do with the fact that one of its key players ended up dying before production. So,
oh, it got Grandia Threed.
Yeah. Heath Ledger, remember?
Oh, yeah. That's...
And the Joker were supposed to be in that movie. And, well, we know what happened to him.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of had to scramble and do some rewrites. And when you only got, you know, Bane there, it's only okay.
Yeah. Well, at least they didn't pull the shit with Schumacher of making him just a dumb brute.
Yeah.
Though, fun fact, Glenn Powell's in that movie.
Yep.
He's the one of the stock market guys that Bane manhandles in that part of the city. So I saw that in the credits, and I was like, wait, what the fuck? And Logan was like, oh, here's baby Glenn Powell. I think also Joey King is the little girl that escapes out of the prison.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, some names that I wasn't expecting to be in that, but that was a fun like close to the whole thing. And then I started watching the Batman.
Batman.
Yeah. Which is pretty good. It's also just I always forget when I started when they go into, you know, some grunge music. It's like, this is the soundtrack for this movie. And I was like, oh god, I forgot about this. Or it's just various songs instead of like any like an orchestral score. Like it's one of the best parts of the Nolan trilogy. Just a really good music. Yeah, that one's pretty good. It's just not, you know, it's taken so long to just get a second movie out that it kind of makes that first movie a little worse for the wear.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't get any real turnaround for that character. I certainly mm-hmm. get what they're going for as far as, you know, like a lot of the like the Nolan trilogy. It's a lot about the corruption of Gotham City and very much a lot of focus on, you know, kind of the crime families that have corrupt a lot of that and get the Waynes involved in that. So yeah, there's that. That was pretty good. And then I built a PC, so I was doing what I thought I should do, which is try out some games that will test it. And that ended up being Euro Truck Simulator 2, a game that runs, I feel like is an unoptimized game to a degree, so it is a very tough game to get running well. And the challenge is, if I want to stream it with OBS open, that's always a game that really is a good combo of just running really poorly when OBS is open, so that maybe there's some other issue I need to work on with that. But I was trying to stream that today, and the game that was running at 60 FPS with all the AMD stuff turned on suddenly could barely hit 30, even with me turning stuff down and all that. So I was like, yeah, this is kind of what I expected here. Some of the other stuff I tried out, like Forza Horizon 4, which has its own benchmark mode to like run a quick race and kind of suggest settings, which was mostly everything turned up except for a handful of options. But it got me to wanting more from PC games, and that there should be multiple profiles you could save for graphics settings, so that you could say like, oh, here's my normal settings that run fine when I'm just playing the game. And here's my settings when I want to really push things a bit, or, you know, streaming settings. Because some games just don't like OBS, which is annoying. But also, the AMD stuff they have for, you know, like NVIDIA also has a similar kind of thing for managing games and having specific kind of settings that run outside of it to try to make these things run better, look better, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really slow piece of shit software.
Yeah.
And the Euro Truck and American Truck Simulator games are very much one of those kind of games that do not like you switching in and out constantly to mess with things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to play around with that last night, and like, this is such an unintuitive kind of thing here to mess with. But I eventually got it running pretty well. But then, yeah, like, Dream was the actual thing. It was like, this is the real test. But yeah, that's been the fun of Chris. It's like, oh yeah, we just made PC gaming more complicated. Because now there's all this super resolution shit, DLSS, ways of generating more frames that makes them less responsive and all this, and ways that these graphics cards have to reduce lag and upscale games and all this extra shit. And it's like, man, I just want to fucking open up all the options and just play the damn game for a lot of games. And also having a shitty PC for a long time, I don't have that many to download to test it out. What I download Gotham Knights, because that's one I had that I know it doesn't run well either way, but I'm interested in checking that one out. And Elden Ring. I think I also have the Justice Squad game, because that was dirt cheap at one point. But that's, I think, is a huge download. So that's the other issue I'm running into. Is I carried over my storage, my RAM, and my motherboard for this PC, because, you know, RAM is incredibly expensive at this point. So if you can carry over what you got, that's a thing to do. And storage is starting to increase in price a good bit. That stuff I still may do some work on and upgrade. These are now getting to be older hard drives, and that's always something you want to not deal with for too long. That's the
true.
That's the fun with PC gaming. And then I was playing some Animal Crossing New Horizons, because their new 3.0 update came out. And
boy, how do you like it?
I'm annoyed that it took them 5 years to fix some quality of life shit. Teresa, I'm sure you really liked crafting and having to have the materials on you to make anything.
Oh my God, I'm so glad that they fixed that.
Yeah. You can now put all your materials in your house storage, which they increased by quite a bit. Like up to 9,000 total items or number of items. I don't know. They don't show you count anyway. So unless you have a ton of time to waste, you can figure out what the limit actually is. But now you can just put all that shit in your house and then craft from that. The my island, I literally, where my DIY station was, was just all the materials I had collected and just did not want to carry. So I spent a good bit just literally picking up all the shit on my island, because you run out of storage pretty quickly. Like, my mailbox is full of stuff. It's like, well, this is free storage. Yep. Don't have to pick it up until I need it. And so now I can put all this stuff away. That's a big, huge change, those couple changes there. They added a new thing that you hold down the L button to move around on a, you know, a tile-by-tile basis, so that if you have a bunch of stuff laying on the ground in the area, you can just hold L, move around, hit A to pick up. It'll pick up the item below you. Make it a lot easier to, like, pick up specific items.
Yeah, that's a really good quality of life upgrade.
Yeah. What else? I think those are a lot of the big ones. Yeah.
I mean, the hotel edition is pretty neat.
Yeah.
Just means that there's more characters roaming around. So, yeah.
Because I just upgraded my house. I was like, fuck everybody else. So now I'm like, okay, now I have to figure out what improves the stars. But that'll eventually... I had gotten the DLC at some point. So I was like, when I started this up for the first time in like 5 years, it was like, oh, here's the hotel. And I was like, oh, is this the hotel stuff? Then it whisked me away and I see the Happy Home Paradise title. I'm like, no, I got fucking tricked. You assholes. And I had to do that for like 20 minutes before I could go back to the island and all that. So yeah, it was it's a really nice improvement for some of that stuff. They still need to keep going, because I was like donating bugs to the museum, and I was trying to go find them just to double check where they were at, and I can't find any fucking bugs I'd need to find, because there's in so many similar. Well, no, I mean, in the museum.
Oh.
Because it's hard to tell, like, where, you know, where would a moth be versus, you know, a butterfly. It's like, there's like a half dozen at least places in, like, some of these areas. And it's like, just let me search for this shit I want to find. Some of that. The other stuff's not too bad for like the fish or the, you know, the dinosaur bones are all pretty easy in the art. Just the bugs, it's like you spread all of this shit out so much that it's hard to tell where everything's supposed to be. But yeah, that's got some really big updates there that are really nice to see. Would have been nice to have them like 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But they decided to stop supporting it, and until they could sell you something, and decided to fix some things again. So yeah, that's some really nice stuff. Oh yeah, also you can craft up to 10 of any item. So if you're trying to make, you know, tools, that's really good. Way, because another annoying thing is a lot of the crafting tool stuff is you make the worst version and then you make a better version out of that worst version.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll just make 10 of these and I don't have to fucking deal with this for a while.
Yep. Makes those spotlight items that you sell to the Nook kids way easier to get done.
Yeah. What else? I don't know when this happened, when you try to look for the rock that spawns gold coins out of it. But the other rocks give you materials as well.
Yeah.
Which is certainly a time sink. I'm trying to find the one to give me, you know, cash.
Oh, what you got to do is you got to dump a lot of crap all over your island and just set like this one little fenced area. And all of them will respawn the next day into that fenced area. I have mine almost in a perfect circle, but there's one that is one effing tile off. And now that we've got the L button to fix that stuff, I might be able to get it fixed now.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then they added some new licensed items. So they got Mario stuff, and I think Zelda stuff as well. Mario I've definitely seen, and there's Lego stuff now. Have done some Lego, various Lego kits, so you can order a bunch of that, which all looks pretty nice. So yeah,
I actually got one of the Lego kits at Christmas time. I got the Celeste one, which was a solid kit, you know.
Yeah, they also added a nice reward for using a bunch of the amiibos for, I think, Zelda amiibos. You can invite specific Zelda themed villagers to your island, as well as Splatoon ones as well. So that's a nice little bonus. And there's like 20 that you can use for each of those. So you don't have to have very specific ones. There's like, you got a Zelda, you got a Link. You can probably use them to get some special people. I don't think you can keep them on the island. You just invite them to hang out for a little while, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, now I'm dealing with people are getting into arguments like, can you take this gift over to them? I'm like, you fucking idiots. You don't need me for any of this shit. But deal with your own fucking problems.
The fetch quests get was really annoying.
Yeah, finding a lost one. Luckily, you get lucky, you get somebody that knows which one, the right person. You don't get asked to go to each one to find out who knows it.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I'm trying to build like a bridge and all this around my island instead of just being the cheap skaters. Like, I got the stick. I can go to cross these rivers pretty easily. And it's also fun seeing like all my Halloween and Easter shit I just left all over the fucking island. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have room for this in the house. I'm sitting out here. And then finding like a mannequin in the middle of my forest, my fruit forest.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh yeah, this is some creepy shit that probably came in one of the Halloween things.
Oh my god.
I got pumpkins growing. I was like, oh yeah, I have pumpkins growing in random places. So that's a fun like time capsule. So I looked up the messages I got, and I pretty much only got them around like Halloween and like end of the year. You get a gift from your mom kind of thing. And it's like, oh, here's one from 2021, and here's 2025. It's like, here's the gaps. Because they had some reward thing for launching Animal Crossing, but they wouldn't let you launch it to the home screen, the start screen. You had to actually load into the island for it to count. I was like, you fuckers. That's some bullshit, but yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing.
All right, Teresa, what about you?
Me, I have been playing some stuff. I've been cold, that's for damn sure. It like feels like zero right now. So yeah, I'm going nowhere. We finished off Super Mario 3D World the other day, which is kind of fun. Of course, now that we can do all the getting all of the stuff that we missed the first time through. Obviously, the Animal Crossing update. I've only done two of the rooms in the hotel so far. But yeah, I was pulling out my Amiibo cards and inviting people for coffee the other day and stuff. It's been a long time since I had really played it in depth. And it's kind of nice to get back to it, especially when other people are playing too. And then I have one. It's not under embargo or anything. It already came out. That I am playing for review for the site, and it's called Cozy Caravan, and I have that one on the Switch as well, and I like it so far. I think that there's a lot to do in it as of now, but I need to play more, you know, to make sure that the content that I think is going to be there, so it looks like I'm going to be unlocking some different areas, you know, stuff like that. So I have been playing a decent bit of that. And then watching like a billion things, but really the one that I guess I've been watching the most is the Ghosts series, the not the UK version, the US version, because I'm lame. But as far as like my usual British shows or whatever, I didn't put this in the notes, but I did start All Creatures Great and Small, and it is very much a British period piece about a vet, which, you know, kind of neat. But trying really hard not to read the news, trying to read the news. I don't know what I need to do or what I want to do about that, but everybody's general... I'm definitely suffering from that as well. But that's... really about it, a lot, but also not a lot. Pat, what have you been up to?
All right, Pat, what about you?
So it's been a minute since I've been on the show.
Yeah.
Last year was interesting for me. I took on a project that I thought was going to take maybe 3 months to get off the ground, and it ended up taking all year. Basically, I spent the last year becoming a vampire. No, I will not elaborate, but... the process was so drawn out and extensive that it actually held up all productivity on Little Akiba Games for the past half year.
Yep.
While I pushed it across the finish line. But
that's basically Pat saying that he may or may not have become a VTuber.
I plead the fifth. Thanks for asking, though.
Yeah.
But... in a note that may or may not be related to that, the Dragon Quest remakes are very, very good, and I'm glad we're getting more of them.
Hooray.
I'm just getting Dragon Quest 1 across the finish line right now. It's been really interesting getting to go back and kind of revisit the game that made me a JRPG gamer. Mm-hmm. Not the game that made me a JRPG lifer, but it got me in, and that was enough, really. Like, it's just... it made me think about how different it was at the time compared to literally everything else going on in gaming. The Nintendo Power promotion, of course. A year of Nintendo Power and a free copy of Dragon Quest for $15 total. What a time to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm looking forward to finally wrapping up Dragon Quest 1. All I've got to do now is just... I feel like the metal slime grind is obligatory, so I'm going to try and grind out enough mini metals to get the metal wing boomerang, and then go on a little bit of a metal slime grind, a liquid metal slime grind in the final dungeon before I finally tie a bow on that game. I'm looking forward to getting into Dragon Quest II because I never did finish that one. And from everything that I've been hearing from people online... they turned it from kind of a black sheep of the series to an all-timer. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they cooked up. I really am. And obviously, we know there are more of these remakes coming because Yuji Horii is the Tom Holland of game development. He will break NDA every time he does an interview. Mm-hmm. So we know that the Zenithian trilogy is coming and probably more than that, but the remakes are just coming out not in the order that they're to be played, but in the order that they are finished by the developers. So that's been kind of a funny thing to add. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he let Chrono Trigger more or less slip, too, so that was funny. But, yeah, it feels good having last year's project across the finish line now, and at this point I'm just looking forward to diving into my backlog and playing all of these games that I bought while working on that, and just actually be able to play them for content as well. So, yeah, that's what I've been up to. How about yourself?
All right, well, as far as gaming is concerned for this week, I've been playing a lot of Splatoon 3. I've basically been playing it, competitive every night. And I'm getting slowly better at it. I've come to kind of realize that when it comes to that game, that if you really, it's kind of a luck of the draw type thing. Obviously, as your equipment evolves and gets better, you'll be a bit stronger and you can deal with stuff a bit easier. But it also has to just to do with the fact that you kind of have to pray that your teammates kind of know what they're doing and that they, actually equip themselves for the job at hand. Because, if you're playing, regular Turf War, you're going to want something that you're going to want, as far as, weaponry is concerned, something that can, put a lot of ink on the ground very quickly without, having to constantly, constantly reloading your ink packet, without constantly having to reload, basically. And part of the problem is that some of the stronger weapons that you can get in that game, they don't really handle ammo very well. They'll be, surprisingly strong, but when you're playing Turf War, you're not just trying to, kill the opposition. You're actively trying to get as much ink on the ground as possible so that by the time, the bell rings, you've got more on the ground than your opposition does. But if you're going up against, you're playing like an anarchy battle and you're doing they say tower defense. It's not really tower defense. It's there's a big, tower thing that's sort of you're trying to guard to get to the goal to the other side. You're going to want something that's going to be able to, easily take out any opposition that comes up against you because, you're going to have four people coming at you at once. There was a challenge that they put out recently, which was based around splat zones. And basically what that is there's an area that's sort of cordoned off on the field and you're trying to keep control of it by, covering it with all of your ink and then trying to defend it against, your opposition. So you're going to want to, and the thing was, is the sort of corollary to it was that you had to be armed with a brush weapon. So that included, the regular, paintbrush weapons or, one of the rollers. And it becomes really obvious pretty early on is that you're going to want to have a team full of nothing but the rollers because the other brush weapons are just garbage compared to it, especially at that point in the game. Because you can, on the one hand, you can literally just run into people with the roller going and it'll just take them out. The other being the fact that you're pretty much indestructible when you're using the roller, theoretically, unless somebody can get behind you and run up behind you, in which case they can just straight up slaughter you. But when you're in that particular challenge, you're going to want to have all rollers And hope that the other team has at least one or two people with a brush. Because if that's the case, then yeah, you've pretty much won the game already because they can't equal the amount of power that you've got. I have also come to realize that I really fucking hate Clam Blitz. It is the one game type in Splatoon 3 I absolutely, unbelievably despise. Because nobody knows how to fucking play it. And every time you try to play it, the other team always completely just murders you mercilessly. It is damn near impossible to play unless, you know what you're doing and everyone else and that knows how to do too. Also, people in Splatoon 3 have no goddamn idea how to coordinate anything. And partly that's because, you know, nobody's doing voice chat or anything. It's a game that has no voice chat, which is a good thing, but when you're doing, you know, cooperative stuff, sometimes voice chat is not a bad thing. But other than that, you know, I still love that game and I'm planning on playing it for the foreseeable future. The other game I've been playing more of is Mortal Kombat 1. Not the original, but the recent one. And I've been going through the campaign for that one, as well as doing some towers and a bit of the invasion stuff as well. I was really loving it up until the point they decided to start doing all the multiverse bullshit again, which was like, I mean, I was like, oh, come on, we already did this shit once. Can't we just stick with this universe for a while? But, it's still Mortal Kombat 1. It's still a lot of fun. Still love it. Other than that, books, nothing really major to talk about there. And, even more hospital stuff. Just to sort of bring everyone who hasn't heard or hasn't been paying attention up to speed. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, my entire family, including me, came down with the flu. My dad brought it home. Me and my mom both got it, and it sucked, as the flu, you know, just in general sucks, especially when you get older and you have to deal with like joint pain and shit like that. Seriously, like there was at least a day where it felt like, you know, I had a couple of freaking Wolverines gnawing on my kneecaps. It was very uncomfortable, but I got better. My dad got better. My mom did not get better. She kept getting worse until Sunday, 3 weeks ago. She woke up and she could not speak. She had completely lost her voice. And Dad ended up finally convincing her to go to the doctor. And they got there and turned out she had bacterial pneumonia in both lungs.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what viral pneumonia, like, it sucks for a few days and then, you know, you're okay. Bacterial pneumonia doesn't work that way because not only does it already suck, but it doesn't just stay in your lungs. That stuff eventually makes its way into your bloodstream and it starts going everywhere else. So my mom was hospitalized. She has been in the hospital for the last 3 weeks. For the record, she is pneumonia free now. But she is, you know, because she's been on her back for so long and because she had to have the ventilator and stuff in her for a while, it's definitely affected her. She's gotten her voice back completely and she can talk, but she talks like she has a bunch of marbles in her mouth because she's had that ventilator in her for so long that kind of messed with her throat and her jaw. So yeah, it's sort of like she's talks sort of like she's constantly got her mouth open, basically. She's been on her back the whole time. So obviously, as you can imagine, she is very weak. And today they are trying to get her a bit more mobile. So she's like, she could sit on the edge of the bed and then like get up and walk to the chair in the room and then back to the bed. She couldn't quite get to that point, but she was able to get up. Honestly, she's just ready to go home. Like, I honestly don't blame her. And she's also like, she told me, because I went to go see her Thursday, and she basically told me that the one thing she wants more than anything else is just a tall, cold glass of water with like ice in it. Because they haven't let her eat or drink anything for several days.
Oh,
She's got like
geez.
a, yeah, she's got like a feeding tube in her nose, and
Oh, so they're
like
still
they're,
keeping her hydrated.
yeah, they're not taking any chances, basically. So, you know, they do have like this little sponge on a stick that they'll let like moisten so she can like, you know, moisten her mouth and the back of her throat so she
Yeah.
isn't constantly completely dry.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. I will say though that the guy who came in to like the dude, his the nurse, his name is Brock. He came in to change out my mom's stuff, and her urine was obviously very dark,
Yeah.
as you can imagine. And I'm hoping they can do something about that, because you know what really dark urine usually means signifies, right?
No good.
Yeah, it means dehydration and also the possibility of kidney stones.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they are still
Or
keeping her
worse.
hydrated. Yeah. But yeah, and eventually when she does get home, like there's gonna be physical therapy involved. She's probably still gonna have to have a little bit of respiratory therapy as well. One of the reasons why she really hasn't been able to come home is because the bacterial pneumonia had gotten to the point where like she was constantly sort of hyperventilating. And when you're doing that, you're not able to get enough oxygen in and enough carbon dioxide out, which side effect of that is it means that you're AFibbing. Yeah. So yeah, that's the other thing. But yeah, that's pretty much everything I've been doing. So you guys got anything you want to add before we move on?
No.
No? All right then. Well, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about obscure, shitty fighting games. A couple of weeks ago, we started off the series talking about Balls 3D, which was a game I used to play a lot on my SNES when I was a kid. Pat, I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
I am.
Yeah, I think
It was
all.
one of those games that kind of suckered in anyone who was really desperate for any kind of 3D fighting at home at the
Yeah.
very dawn of the genre.
Yeah. And weirdly enough, it was weirdly like technologically progressive for its time period, but it was also had one of the worst soundtracks I've ever heard in a video game ever. I think the
Yes.
best way to describe it is like somebody, and I've said this like three or four times now, it sounds like somebody trying to do mid-90s house music on a shitty Casio keyboard for like a
Yeah.
really low quality porn tape or something.
That's fair.
Yeah. And then the week after that, we talked a little bit about Tattoo Assassins, the honestly unpolished turd that was created by Data East Pinball Division, literally the first video game they
Yep.
ever actually worked on. That was originally helmed by the guy who wrote the screenplay for Back to the Future. And of course, that game never officially was released.
Yeah, it's an interesting preservation case.
There's a there like you can see it all over on the internet. You can download it and like play it on an emulator on your computer,
Yeah, I
and
was
it's
going to
like
say, I'm pretty
real.
sure it's running in MAME these days.
Yeah, and there apparently there's a company that's trying to sort of bring it back by like fixing it and adding new content and stuff.
Oh, that's some really strong turd polish, though.
I'm trying to remember who it is. Let me. Blah, 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 blah. It's XA Arcadia. Yeah, they're reviving it with bug fixes and 4K resolution under a deal with Data East current rights holders. Anyway, so those were the games we talked about previously. This week we're going to talk about probably one of the most notorious like Mortal Kombat clone failures that ended up happening back in the day, especially in the mid-90s, especially because for two reasons. One is this game was advertised like to hell and back. If you were reading the video game magazines back then, you saw ads for this game everywhere. The other reason being the fact that it came out on one of the sort of half a dozen Quixotic attempts at making a game console that would be an utterly terrible failure. And in this case, it just so happened to be the Atari Jaguar. That's right. This week we're going to discuss a little bit about Kasumi Ninja. Kasumi Ninja was, like I said, it was a Mortal Kombat clone. And if you know anything about gaming in the mid-90s, you know that there were a ton of companies that were trying to steal Mortal Kombat's thunder and just absolutely horribly failing at just about at every single attempt. And the reason they failed at every single attempt is they tried to recreate the spectacle of Mortal Kombat without realizing what actually makes Mortal Kombat fun to play, which is that it's not all just random button mashing and gore galore. There's actually a simple but sophisticated system lying underneath it, especially by the time Mortal Kombat 3 rolled around. But Kasumi Ninja in particular was notorious due to the fact that it was, of all the like major Mortal Kombat clones that existed, it was probably the one that was the most notoriously biggest rip-off of all of them.
It looked very similar, like
It not only did it
incredibly
look
similar.
very not only did it look incredibly similar, the basic like scenario behind it was incredibly similar. You know,
Yeah.
there's an island and everybody's got to go to this island for this tournament and everything. And it's got two palette swap ninja characters. It's
Sends a lot
got
of
the
Habaki.
ethnic stereotypes, which was Pakawa and Angus. Pakawa being the Native American, Angus, of course, being the Scotsman who could fire fireballs from out the underneath his kilt.
Just
There
sit with that
was,
one for a moment.
yeah, and I'm not making it
Right.
up either. Like it's
No, I mean,
he lifts up
this is
his
a game that
kilt.
I have spent a disturbing amount of time playing. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I like out of all of the bad Mortal Kombat clones, this was one of the least bad, I would say.
Yeah. And the thing is, what's especially infuriating when you learn about this game's development is you find out that this game actually could have been even better than the product we ended up getting at the end, because it turns out that Atari themselves are more or less the reason why this game came out to be the piece of garbage that it ended up being. So just a little bit about the people who made this game. It was a UK-based developer called Handmade Software, and they had been developing titles up to that point for the Atari Lynx. And for those who don't know what the Atari Lynx was, it was Atari's handheld platform.
Very interesting system. It actually had ambidextrous functionality, which
Yeah,
was
which for the time period was extremely forward thinking. But by that point, Atari had announced the Jaguar, and obviously we could do a whole thing about the Jaguar itself because it is one of the most bizarre looking consoles of that era to come out, especially because of the fact that it's the only console with the basic controllers that had a numpad on it. Like, just
Yep.
why?
That was a holdover from the 5200, and it was used
Yeah.
pretty much in exactly the same way as the 5200 used it, just
Which is
as
that it was
extra
very
utility
rarely used.
buttons.
Yeah, extra utility buttons basically.
It picked weapons in Doom, it picked camera angles and stuff like that in, oh, what was that fucking game? Cybermorph.
Yep. And what's funny
Guessing it
is,
was similar in Alien vs. Predator, but I never did get to spend much time with that game.
Yeah. What's especially the development of this game in particular is also interesting because it originally was not going to have the like digitized graphics that we know of. Originally, when they started development on this, it was going to use character sprites, like something, similar to
Like
Street
hand-drawn.
Fight. Yeah, hand drawn, something similar to Street Fighter, essentially. And on top of that, it wasn't going to have just eight playable characters. It was going to have around 20.
That would have been a game changer back then.
Yeah, it absolutely would have been. But according to Jim Gregory, who was one of the producers at Handmade, he said that Atari Corporation basically got involved at some point. They ended up stripping much of the characters and a bunch of the other elements that were previously developed for the title, and they also ended up like reducing the memory size for the game cartridge. So, like that already, it's like okay, this is going to be a disaster. And then it started showing up at the Spring Electronic, the ECTS 94 and SCES 94 in a playable state. By that point, it was now sporting the digitized graphics and sprites that would come with the final release. There were like some copies that came with like a headband accessory branded with the game's logo. I mean, that would probably be considered something of a collectible now.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, like even if you look at like a lot of the the like advertisements and stuff, or like even the freaking box art for this thing, it's like, yeah, this is straight up a giant ass Mortal Kombat clone. Like I
Yeah.
said, they even had the palette swap ninjas. It had the ethnic stereotypes. It also had two female characters, which was obviously more than the first, but only about as many as Mortal Kombat 2 had. And I will say, compared to Mortal Kombat 2, they weren't just a palette swap of each other. In this case, there was there was an Amazonian woman who was like the head of like an Amazon tribe, and she basically wears next to nothing because it's the 90s, and that's basically what all female video game characters have to do. And then there was another one who was like an assistant DA who also acts as like a vigilante during the night. She's in there too. There's like this huge, I can't remember if he's like a Dutchman or a German named Alarak, who's like this big giant of a man. And then of course, there's the standard kung fu guy and the previously mentioned Native American stereotype, which, to be fair, at that point, Mortal Kombat had not gotten their Native American stereotype in there yet either. But like I said, the plot, it's like it's more or less heavily almost copy for copy of the Mortal Kombat world. Basically, there's this island called Kasumi that has spawned some of the most renowned warriors seen in the world, while also remaining hidden from eyes of the modern world within the mist that surrounds it, due to the preeminent celestials, making those who find the place uninvited never being heard from again. Those on the island, I'm reading from Wikipedia, by the way. This is like the plot as it's written. Those on the island are trained both in body and spirit at the Dragon Cloud Temple by three wise and capable elder ninjas, with each one representing an aspect of humanity, and due to the balance of good and evil between them, it allows the gate to the netherworld remain closed. But one of the eldest ninjas on the island, Gaku, kills both Hiei and Kaio, the other two elder ninjas, fracturing the alignment of the cosmic forces and opening the gate to the underworld in the process, resulting in Gaku becoming possessed by a powerful demon capable of destroying the Earth. As a result, the player takes the role of either fighters chosen by the Celestials in order to defeat Lord Gaku and restore balance to the universe. Basically, the story of Mortal Kombat 1 and Mortal Kombat 2 mashed together.
Yeah.
And as far as like gameplay is concerned, it's just a straight up copy of Mortal Kombat as well. You got the same, six buttons, up,
If you were
got
lucky.
if you were lucky. High punch, low kick, high kick, jump block. You got to deplete the health bar of the guy next to you. Each round is timed. There's four levels of difficulty. One thing that is unique compared to a lot of games at the time is it actually came with a parental lock feature, where you can actually like manually limit the amount of gore that's in the game. The biggest, like the highest you can go is Gore Fest, which is where all of the gore is there, and the death moves, which of course is this game's versions of fatalities, are there among other settings. And what is unique is that as far as like the single player mode is concerned, there were only two characters that were selectable at the beginning, and more would be unlocked by defeating them in a series of one-on-one matches in the game. And if you manage to defeat all of the opponents in the lowest difficulty, the player will not be able to fight against Gyaku, but he can fight against him on the normal difficulty. And of course, depending on your difficulty level, it'll tell you like how many continues you've got, how difficult the other enemy will be, stuff like that. Like I said, it was pretty much a cut and dry copy of Mortal Kombat, and as far as like the advertising go, they were so unbelievably like over the top confident, they famously called it the Mortal Kombat Killer,
Yeah.
which did not
It was
happen.
probably on track to be that until Atari stepped in.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, it ended up getting a mixed to negative response from critics. It was, like I said, at least a couple of times, already considered a blatant ripoff of Mortal Kombat, including the gameplay, the graphics, the graphic violence, the poor controls. GamePro commented that the graphics were technically impressive, but often unpleasant to look at due to the aesthetics choices, such as the palette swap characters, the massive blood drops, and of course, Angus and his kilt lifting thing.
Yeah,
The
that was
controls, the
unfortunate.
music, the announcer's voice. Oh, I forgot to mention the announcer's voice. Yeah, it's done with like the most horrifying, like Chinese
Cursed.
stereotypical accent you can think of. Because it was 1994 and people just didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
Next Generation gave it a 1 out of 5, calling it a tragic example when good ideas are poorly executed. And as far as like like retrospectives, most that go back to play this game will again say that yeah, the graphics were very technically impressive for the time, but everything else with it is just it just doesn't work. The controls are
Yeah.
terrible, it's a horrible cash-in for a Mortal Kombat clone. Should be ignored by all the most devoted 64-bit Atari Jaguar fans. That's according to Allgame. GamePro years later would say that, quote, Kasumi Ninja was a terrible, terrible Jaguar title, bad controller, bad controls, terrible menu set, forgettable characters, and an utterly unoriginal premise that thankfully history has forgotten.
And now I know it was an unforced error.
So yeah, that was Kasumi Ninja. It's arguably it wasn't I would say it's up there as being like one of the first major Mortal Kombat clones that came out. There were others that would follow. Obviously you had like other like super violent fighters that had come out before it, like Time Killers, which we've talked about on the show before, so we won't go back to it. But
Have you
yeah,
done Way
and
of the Warrior yet?
we have not done Way of the Warrior yet. We will get that because that one has a whole crazy story behind it all on its own. Yeah, that is Kasumi Ninja. That is the story of one of the first and most infamous Mortal Kombat clones, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Brand of Factoid. So, with that, we're going to move on to the show proper. And as always with our show proper, we talk about our assholes of the week. And our major asshole of the week is Twitter, because nobody calls it X. Screw you, Elon. And it has to do with the fact that there was recently a feature that they added with Grok AI, where Grok could manipulate any images shown on command. And it and considering the vile cesspool that Twitter's user base is made up of, it ended up being used exactly as how you thought it would be. And amongst other things, this week they decided to block that ability from Grok, where it's currently illegal. And yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not a huge surprise that they would basically try to do this on a, you know, country by country basis.
Yeah.
On that. Yeah, it's very much as Eli was like, oh, this is a left wing conspiracy and all that made up by the media.
Dude, you put out an AI that was making kitty porn.
Yeah.
Like what? What?
And it also more or less made his own service unusable for the entire time it was going on, because you mentioned earlier just straight up, yeah, I've become a VTuber, and as a VTuber, you kind of have to use Twitter to be visible and to get engagement. That wasn't happening. Like, this whole thing completely took over the service.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, basically anybody that posted their, you know, selfies or whatever would often get comments related to that. So like the only positive thing is people had to actually reply to these images or these posts to get Grok to do this stuff. And I saw some of these were like, I guess women that would be like, you know, OnlyFans people or whatever, just trying to get, you know, any sort of traction they can. Like trying to do it directly from their accounts to ask Grok to undress them. Mm-hmm. And I saw some that was just like, it either didn't do it or it was so inept it put more clothes on them and all that. So I was like, all right, at least Grok still sucks for even the thing that they're supposed to be able to do. But yeah, it's one of those stupid things. And yeah, they also have government contracts for Grok in a number of ways. So this is all a great time to be dealing with that shit.
Jesus Christ.
So yeah, that is happening. It has now, all of Grok has been blocked by both Malaysia and Indonesia, because, you know, we kind of saw that one coming. And Malaysia in particular is taking legal action against both Twitter and against X and XAI.
Yeah, which is fun.
Yeah.
Let's see what they say here. From Indonesia's Indonesian Communication and Digital Affairs Minister, the government sees non-consensual sexual deepfakes as a serious violation of human rights, dignity, and the safety of citizens in the digital space, which is, you know, a good way to put it. And yeah, Malaysia also doing the same thing, which is good to see. Yeah, two Southeast Asian nations kind of going after them.
Well, two super duper Muslim Southeast Asian nations.
Yes.
That's
one of the big reasons. And like I said, Malaysia is taking legal action against both X and XAI, and the UK is making legal changes to criminalize those who use or supply, quote, nudification tools.
Yeah. They've kind of had a law that could cover this, but they kind of made sure it was.
Yeah, they wanted to go back and make some alterations so it would cover it explicitly.
Yeah, that make it illegal to create online sexual images of someone without their consent. Will be going into force, I think, on February. Where was it here? I think February 6th. Yeah. Government says it's fast tracking provisions in the Data Use and Access Act, making it a criminal offense to create or request deepfake images. The act was passed by Parliament last year, but had not been brought into force. And so that'll be going into effect on February 6th. Separately, the government said it is also criminalizing nudification apps as part of the Crime and Policing Bill, which is currently going through Parliament. The new criminal offense will make it illegal for companies to supply tools designed to create non-consensual intimate images. Saying it would target the problem at its source. And so, yeah, the UK is sort of investigating all this, though, you know, they should just block X in totality. Google and Apple should block it from their app stores. It's how you could get all this shit to change real quick.
That's true.
But they're afraid of making the rich baby man mad.
Yeah. So that's all happened, and it's just the most glorious bit of Twitter screwing up that it's had in pretty much all of Elon's tenure. So, But then we got to move on from Twitter to the other major asshole of the week, because he takes up about the next four of them to some extent. President Trump is threatening to use the Insurrection Act to send military to Minnesota to end the anti-ICE protests. ICE flooded a family's SUV with tear gas to send them and their six kids to the hospital. For the record, the way the Insurrection Act works, he can't really do that. the thing about the Insurrection Act is it doesn't really do what he threatens it does. And considering the fact that Governor Tim Walz has already activated the National Guard, it means that the hurdle for him to be able to even accomplish, to even get that, to invoke it, is just a bit higher now. But basically, as everybody knows, after the murder of Renee Good by an ICE agent, basically everything in Minnesota is on fire.
Yeah.
Which is surprising, because that place is cold as all hell. But, yeah, and obviously ICE is not making it any good, because being nothing but an army of reprobates, they have only doubled down and are trying to make things even more miserable.
Yeah, they... people dug into the, like, recruitment process and found out that you don't even have to finish the application to get accepted.
Yeah.
Because journalists are just, like, finished most of it, with a real name and everything that, you know, if you verified, you could see they're a member of the media, you know, a leftist and all that, and they still got approved.
Yep.
And it made me wonder, like, why aren't people filling out fake applications to flood their servers?
Yeah.
Shit, considering what's all's going on. But yeah, then you see pretty much most of these people are the basically any Nazi militia in this country is probably signed up for ICE in some shape or form.
Yep.
Because there's photos of many of them that have, you know, Nazi tattoos.
Yeah. Swastikas or SS rune bolts or...
Let's be honest, that's the only way some of them would be employable.
Yeah. Also, a lot of them, it turns out, are functionally illiterate.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently, a lot of them do not, straight up, do not know how to read or write. A lot of them didn't finish high school. You know how it goes. That shit with ICE in Minneapolis is still ongoing.
I don't know if you saw the ICE thing. The one ICE person was angrily storming towards somebody that was recording it and just slipped on ice and fell on their ass, because none of these people are from a northern state that is used to cold weather.
Yeah.
Want a blizzard more.
Yeah.
You know?
You would think if they were going to Minnesota, they would have equipped them with non-slip shoes, but...
No.
I mean, that doesn't stop you from walking on, you know, slippery-ass ice.
No, but it does give you a bit more traction in a wintry, you know, cold-weather place.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about ice is that they're starting to realize that they're nothing but, you know, bullet catcher meat bags. They're being used.
Yeah, people have been tracking, like, morale in the organization, and it is at, like, rock bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's somebody that threw bottles of piss into an ICE vehicle.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
things like that. It's like, guy got out and was very mad that he was, you know, covered in piss and all that.
I'm sure there are a lot of truck drivers going through Minneapolis that have their piss jugs that, I mean, waste not, want not.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the deputy head of ICE was complaining about there's a video you can find of people dumping water on the ground around ICE. To be like, oh, what if it turns into ICE and all that? And they're like, this is very dangerous. And you go watch the video, it's barely enough to get the ground wet. It'll just dry up. Like, it's not going to turn to ice, you idiots.
Have they not heard of salt? For Christ's sake. Right?
I mean, they think dumping, like, a light layer of water on a cold day is going to turn to ice. is a threat to them. It's like, no, you just get a squeegee or something.
Right.
Get rid of the water. Like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
These people are idiots. But yeah, that's been fun seeing all the bullshit, but not so much the part where they're basically finding anybody that isn't white and harassing them in every way that they can. And so, yeah, those people don't deserve any peace for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
None.
Especially now families. That... Yeah, and especially now we know that there's a database of their members that you can now go to and look through, just FYI. But moving on from there to another thing, President Trump is now threatening tariffs on countries that don't back the U.S. seizing control of Greenland. 8 EU countries will get 10% tariffs on February 1st. Because this is basically like his hyperfixation now is getting Greenland for whatever reason.
I'm still not distracted.
Yeah, I'm not. We all know what he's trying to do, but you know, this is basically, if he does try to take Greenland, that might legitimately be the end for him. Because on the one hand, that would basically break NATO. And there's a bunch of folks in GOP parts of Congress that would not be cool with that.
Yeah.
And
they're saying so.
Yeah, very publicly. Saying if he does this, he will be impeached. So, yeah, that's happening.
Yeah, I don't know that the GOP are going to stop it.
I've seen
some that are very much in support of it.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, oh, this is like when we got Alaska and all this. And it's like, those are under very different circumstances, not just a man who's desperate for any sort of legacy in the federal government that wants his name on everything. So if he could, you know, acquire Greenland in a way that's, you know, would be part of his legacy as president.
Yeah.
He would very much like to do that. Even though we really don't need it. And it's just basically looking like, you know, we're just trying to start World War III over Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not really what we should be doing. Considering how we're isolating ourselves against anybody that was an ally for the last, you know, 100 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's happening. Moving on to another related story. Two Senate GOP members flipped to stop Venezuela War Powers Bill so that Vance could break the tie to shut it down.
Yeah. Basically, Trump applied pressure. Two senators and one Josh Hawley and Todd Young. Flipped, to make it a 50-50 deadlock instead of 52-48. And then J.D. Vance came in to stop it as the tie-breaking vote. So yeah, so much for the Senate and Congress, you know, holding Trump accountable.
Hawley was talking a good game, too.
Yeah, though you know not to trust anything he says.
Yeah.
Nope. Bought and paid for.
And last but not least for our assholes of the week, disgraced former House Representative Duncan Hunter got a pardon from President Trump and is now pushing for a pardon of a disgraced San Diego lawyer.
Yeah. So remember Duncan Hunter is the guy who misused campaign funds to buy vacations and all that.
So he's really a Trump kind of guy.
Yeah. And now that he is out, he is a consultant for a lobbying firm that is trying to get a pardon for Raymond Liddy, the son of G. Gordon Liddy of the Watergate fiasco.
Yep.
Who was convicted in 2020 of possessing child sexual abuse material.
Yep.
Also a Trump kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can read more about this at talk about the links between them and all that, and where this guy is going and seeing where the Trump pardon train. Luckily, part of this is not going to get rid of everything related to this, because a lot of this is state charges, especially the ones that require him to be filed as a sexual
sex offender.
Yeah, sex offender. Those are states' lists, so he would not be getting removed. He might get out of prison, but he would not clear his name.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly the sort of person that Trump would try to pardon.
Mm-hmm.
Much like they're trying to do with the woman from Colorado who tried to help overturn the election.
Yeah.
Who can't get out because those are state charges.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to withhold money from Colorado until they do that.
Yeah. And fortunately, however, it's not all terrible because we do have some heroes of the week. Mackenzie Scott donated $45 million to the Trevor Project at the end of 2025.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Their biggest ever gift in their history, especially in the wake of them losing significant federal funding over the summer for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And that is great to see is, you know, formerly Jeff Bezos' wife has sort of taken her half of the money and has basically gone on a spree donating large chunks of it and still has more money than when she started doing this. So there's really no reason that rich people cannot donate their wealth in large sums. But yeah, she has made it her mission. Along with any personal pursuits to, you know, donate that money as much as she can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Could still do more, but she does way more than anybody else. Doesn't put it into...
Yeah, she's regularly in the news about it.
Yeah. Doesn't put that money into grants and such where they can hold more power over how it's used. Like what most of the billionaires do. So yeah. Just some... Good news for, you know, a great charity that helps out transgender people.
Yep. So, yeah, we got that. And with that, we're going to now move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we say goodbye tonight to Miss Claudette Colvin, who was a pioneer in the civil rights struggle. She famously refused to give up her seat on a bus to a white man about 9 months before Rosa Parks did hers. And in fact, I believe she actually went to court and won.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she passed away this week at the age of 86. And of course this was like in the mid 1950s and, you know, already, you know, people famously know the Montgomery bus boycott that started with Rosa Parks. But obviously there were others that came before her. There was another black teenager named Mary Louise Smith, that did the same thing and was arrested and fined in October of that year. She was one of the four plaintiffs in the landmark lawsuit that outlawed racial segregation on Montgomery's buses. She actually had to file back in 2021 to have her court record expunged, which a judge granted the request because, you know, all that stuff. One of those individuals in the pantheon of civil rights activists and pioneers that we have lost another one from that era. But... You know, a major part of her legacy is that, you know, there is no segregation on any buses. So, you know.
And another reminder that it's not as distant in the past as it feels like.
Nope. It isn't. It is not. And then we also found out this week that Scott Adams died.
Yep.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
The White House had the most amazing tribute to him.
Mm-hmm.
As they had like a animated version of Trump and J.D. Vance on there,
mm-hmm.
and not an animated version of Scott Adams, but Dilbert.
Yeah,
next to that, couldn't even put him in that. So yeah, he created Dilbert.
Yeah,
a very popular comic strip that you know, got a TV show and all that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good exercise in separating the art from the artist too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he got on the internet
and lost his damn mind.
Just became conspiracy nuts, right-wing lunatic.
It's a cult.
Yeah. And
he got brainwashed. He got indoctrinated.
Douche, in other words.
Yeah.
One of those individuals who thinks they're smarter than everyone else in the room.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you go back and read Dilbert, you realize that, yeah, it was kind of always there.
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing about it is, like, Dilbert spent a lot of time lampooning what he eventually became.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the real tragedy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I got a post from Trump on the True Social saying he was a fantastic guy who liked and respected me when it wasn't fashionable to do so. He bravely fought a long battle against a terrible disease. Like, still has to
make
it
about
him.
By the way.
I would put fought in quotation marks there, too.
He had prostate cancer, by the way, for those who were curious.
Yeah. And I asked for financial help to fight it, but it won in the end.
Mm-hmm.
His method of quote-unquote fighting it was ivermectin.
Yeah. Same type of cancer.
So that's why I'm reluctant to say that he fought cancer at all.
Yeah.
Same cancer that Biden has, though not as serious of a version. He had a worse version. He had terminal cancer.
Yeah. I think with Biden, like, they were able to catch it early enough.
Then he has, you know, the president's health care.
Yeah, that too. But, like, everybody remembers him for Dilbert, but that wasn't obviously not the only thing he did. There's all the Dilbert compilations that were published. The ones that were both, you know, titled, the ones that were, you know, like, themed compilations, various Dilbert-related business publications, Dilbert-related books. He also published two novels, autobiography, and a bunch of books about after he had completely lost his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like chronicling the disintegration of a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he left quite a paper trail behind him. Scott Adams, he is gone. Do with that what you will. And now we're moving on to the rest of the show. The next sort of news story we got here. The Clintons, Bill and Hillary, are refusing to testify in the House's Epstein probe as they face contempt charges. The reason they are not doing that is because they want to testify publicly.
Well, they want to submit a written
statement
like most of the other former officials mm-hmm. have been allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's the Clintons, the GOP in this committee don't want to allow them to do that. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's kind of the whole thing here. Basically, yeah, there's a House Oversight probe on the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. And, of course, the Clintons would be a key duo to put in there to mm-hmm. grill, and they aren't getting that.
Yeah.
So they're looking to file contempt of Congress charges on them, which is like, yeah, I imagine they have talked to their lawyers extensively about what their options are on this, and they're prepared to probably fight anything they get out of this. So
yeah. It is kind of funny though, because they've spent, you know, decades now trying to turn the Clintons into the ultimate boogeyman. And, you know, now we find out that, you know, Bill might have actually been involved in something really terrible with Epstein. And yet they're really tiptoeing around it by trying to dump all of it on the Clinton. It's just, it's really funny, but we also found out this week that the Trump administration is threatening a criminal indictment for Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, which that would probably be the worst possible mistake he could make.
Yeah, he put out a video basically talking about this whole thing and how it's, you know, a grave step mm-hmm. against an independent institution that's part of the federal government.
Yeah, and the global economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because keep in mind, part of the reason why the dollar has been the world's reserve currency for so long is because the Federal Reserve is a term of art independent group that is, able to make money through funds through the securities that it owns and able to back up our currency. But if it was to be shown that the Federal Reserve is not an independent organization, but in fact a direct arm of the United States government, that would put our currency's stability in jeopardy.
Yeah. Of course, Trump doesn't know how to handle money, really. But yeah, this, and he very much, I assume he's a Republican. I was looking at his Wikipedia
He
page.
was the one, well, yeah, because Trump was the one who nominated and put him there in the first place.
No, he was nominated by Obama. But he
Well,
was
yeah.
also put into various positions by George H.W. Bush
Well, yeah, that's true.
back in the 90s. So he's very much probably a classic Republican, which
Yeah.
Trump has no desire to appease in any way if they're not sworn, their fealty to him. So Jerome Powell's very much wanting to do the right job, not the partisan job of any of this. And he talks about how he's worked under, Democratic and Republican presidents, Republican presidents being Trump and then Obama and Biden for that. So yeah, because they're trying to tie this all into the renovation of the two office buildings that the Fed is trying to get renovated for a while now. Because the cost is at $2.5 billion, they're like, this is excessive. And it's like, I don't know what these buildings need, but that seems fine considering everything else they're spending their money on. But yeah, that's basically what's going on here. Trying to attack them and find some fraud issue that you can claim they have, which has not worked on anybody else they've been going after. So yeah, there you go.
This week we also found out that NASA has brought home an ailing astronaut and three others a month early due to various health issues. Among them are two Americans, one Japanese, and one Russian.
Yeah. So they had that happen. And try to see what he had. Yeah, let's see here. They're helped under reclining cots and whisked away for standard medical checks. Yeah. Took him to a San Diego area hospital. So yeah, that's not sure what the I specifically had, but enough that they didn't want them to stay in space for much longer. I believe there are only one American and two Russians on board the space station right now. So they're trying to bump up a fresh crew that is targeting mid-February to go up there to launch new crew of four. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it's a bit surprising, though. I think this is their first medical emergency they've had to bring people back early for. So luckily, everybody should be all right. There you go.
Yeah. And now for something that is troubling. Wikipedia has signed AI deals with Microsoft, Meta, and others to get paid for their data scraping.
Yeah, data scraping. So yeah, they're finally getting people to pay for the thing that they've obviously been doing. So this is mostly good news. So the way that headlines are going for this stuff, it makes it sound way worse than it actually is. Like they're signing up to put AI into Wikipedia, which is not what they're doing. They're just trying to get paid for something that the that's good. Let's see, the AI companies signed up for this. Amazon, Meta Platforms, Perplexity, Microsoft, and France's Mistral AI. Yeah, and this is also co coinciding with their 25th anniversary of being around. So good on them to get paid. So yeah, not really much else there. So yeah, there you go.
So that is happening, and now we're going into the entertainment portion of the show with the story that Kathleen Kennedy has officially stepped down from Lucasfilm, with Dave Filoni taking over as CEO.
Yeah, not really a huge surprise. I think this has been going for a bit. Certainly, probably pleases the internet whiner crowd of Star Wars fans.
I was going to say, what does this mean in tangible terms?
They put a Star Wars fanboy in charge of Star Wars now. Dave Filoni. He's been the guy leading the charge on like the a lot of their animated stuff. The Mandalorian, Andor. Basically, if you wanted them to focus on maybe more original stuff in Star Wars, maybe say goodbye to that. Otherwise, it'll probably just most a lot of what you've been getting in Star Wars.
Okay. See, I don't know any of the players involved in this, so I don't know what the what this actually meant. So.
Mostly the people that have complained about Star Wars being woke are happy because the mean woman is gone. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. It's
but
one
Dave
of those
Filoni
situations.
Been, yeah. Dave Filoni's been chief commercial officer for a long time, so it's not like it's going to change all that much.
Yeah. But, yeah. So that's happened. And then we got this story about, again, the ongoing saga of people trying to get a deal with WB Discovery. After trying to steal the WB Discovery deal from Netflix, Paramount is now going to the EU to stop the deal.
Yeah.
Because, like, they are just desperate to get this for...
Yeah, they filed a lawsuit to try to get the financial details of the deal, whereas WB Discovery basically came out and it's like, you know, you haven't increased your offer at any point since you started this whole thing.
This has got to be one of the douchiest things that have ever happened.
Well, this is a son of a billionaire. He's always used to getting his way, and somebody said no, so now he's very mad and needs to force this to happen. Basically, what's going on here? He's trying to get the EU regulators to scrutinize and stop the deal, which I don't know this is going to work. Trump's not going to stop it because he likes Netflix's CEOs. They've had dinner and all that and donated to his campaign. So, like everybody else, they
kiss the ring.
Pay their money. Yeah. And also, CBS is potentially going to get sued by the government again or Trump because they're pissed about his interview with whatever Tony Ducopoli or whatever his name is.
There's no pleasing him, so they're always going to get sued. That's what they just don't seem to realize, that we all realize.
Yeah. That he's always going to find things to be whining about, so. This is their
Complainer
next...
Complainer-in-chief.
Yeah. Paramount's trying to find any route they can to become the victor here, and I don't think that's going to happen. They should settle for the rest of Warner Brothers Discovery, probably the Discovery part that Netflix doesn't want. It would still be bad because that's a lot of the news stuff and all that. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So we got that bullshit happening. And speaking of Netflix, Netflix and Sony Pictures have signed a new deal to keep the exclusive streaming rights for a movie.
Yeah. Kind of just continuing that deal that they've already had. They have pay one rights is what this is called. The industry's term for post-theatrical and on-demand window. In the U.S., Germany, and Southeast Asia, the new arrangement won't come into full effect until early 2029, but it'll start later this year as individual territory rights become available. So I guess they're hoping to sweep up a lot of those rights along the way until this new deal goes into effect. They're also licensing rights to select Sony Picture film and television library titles, so more of their back catalog stuff. And I guess they're saying that this might be worth above $7 billion for this deal. So, paying a lot of money for the Sony stuff, which is, you know, a lot of Spider-Man stuff and all that. So certainly well worth it. So yeah, there you go for that.
Yeah. And we also found out this week that HBO Max and A24 have signed a new deal for their streaming rights for their movies. So that's good, I guess.
Yeah. Similar to the Netflix thing, they're renewing their deal that they've had for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the pay one TV window rights for HBO and HBO Max.
Yeah.
For that, so Marty Supreme will be showing up on HBO Max later this year.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things, they're also getting access to a library of dozens of their other films.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like A24, HBO Max is going to be the service for you. They say here, nearly 70% of HBO Max viewers watched an A24 film. That watched an A24 film watched other ones that they put out. Makes sense. If you like one of their movies, there's probably others they have that are similar.
And we also found out this week that K-pop Demon Hunters won the Golden Globes for Best Original Song and Best Original Feature.
Best Animated Feature.
Best. Yeah, that's what I said. Best Animated Feature.
You said Best Original.
Well, like, fuck you too.
You missed it.
Yeah. But yes, you were right. Original Song and Best Animated Feature.
Yeah. EJ had a good speech for the winning the Best Original Song. Mm-hmm. Saying, when I was a little girl, I worked tirelessly for 10 years to fill one dream, become a K-pop idol, and I was rejected and disappointed mm-hmm. that my voice isn't good enough. I'm so glad to be part of a song that is helping other girls, other queens, and everyone of all ages to get through their hardship to accept themselves. And dedicated the award to people who have their doors closed at them, that I can confidently say rejection is redirection, and so never give up. Then quoted Golden saying, it's never too late to shine like you were born to be.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, good for her. She went through a lot to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we'll be interested to see how this goes for the Oscars, because that could be a big, big win for them if they win the Oscar for Best Animated Film.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And we also found out this week that Amazon Prime is working on a competition series called Fallout Shelter, which is, I guess, kind of sort of inspired by that mobile game.
Yeah, and how everybody else is doing competition shows for their
mm-hmm.
successful series.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing casting now for a 10-episode reality series.
Mm-hmm.
The logline, set inside Vault Tech's bomb-proof vaults, Fallout Shelter drops a diverse group of contestants into an immersive, high-stakes world inspired by the game's signature dark humor, retro-futurism, and post-apocalyptic mm-hmm. survival storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, having them go through escalating challenges and all this other stuff. Basically what yep. the Squid Games challenge thing was, but for Fallout.
Mm-hmm. And then we also have The Running Man is available to stream on Paramount Plus right now, actually.
Yeah. That's a good one. I recommend checking it out.
Oh, yeah.
Do some good
when did Edgar that come Wright's out?
Action. Last year? Last November, I think, or October.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, November 14th, mm-hmm. so. Yeah. Good stuff.
And, yeah, and last but not least, Zoe Saldana has officially become the highest grossing actor of all time.
Yeah. I want to say she's in the top four movies on the all-time box office list.
Yep.
She's in all three Avatars and Avengers Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
As well as some of the other Marvel stuff. And she is the robot woman in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
So, yeah. Or no, she's the she's the green lady. Sorry.
Yeah.
So yeah. That makes sense it's her, because she's in all those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And good for her.
Oh yeah, definitely. She's not a bad actress at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So, To everybody who's listening, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of Unscripted Shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can possibly imagine. If we're not on there, just wait a few minutes. We will be eventually. It all eventually comes back to us. But yeah, we're going to end it here. We're going to wind it down here. Thank you, Chris and Pat and Teresa, for joining me on this little shenanigan. For all of you out there who are listening, whether you're a person who's just encountering us for the first time or someone who's been with us from the very beginning all the way up to this 500th episode of this bullshit we do every week, please do not hesitate.
500 of these.
Yeah, 500. No joke. Please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone in between, because they may hate you, but there's a good 50-50 chance they'll end up liking us, and that sounds like something that'll benefit everybody, I think. I never really did fractions good. But, yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it here. Join us next week for some more bullshit. Hopefully World War III will not have started by then, but if it has, well, we'll be giving you the play-by-play. So, good night, everybody. See you next week.